one big philosophy that we have in our business is we don't actually give that much of a about the client's business, as such as like what they do.
Don't care. Like, we care about the people who are running the business.
And we've had people come to our course early days, 2021, and say, I don't know if this hair thing is for me, you know, like maybe this isn't for me. We'll say, yeah, great. What is for you? You know, we'll help them discover that.
I speak to a lot of younger barbers that are starting out, and they seem to see the kind of end zone is, I'm going to open up my own shop. And the first thought in my head is, why? You can, but what do you actually want your life to look like? Do you find that frustrating when you've got someone who you're working with that just isn't doing it? Do you dump clients? Please stop giving me your money. You're really not taking my advice seriously.
Yeah. We definitely shake them up when they need it.
Right.
And that's the job of any good coach, right? Sometimes you need to be like pretty direct with somebody about like where
they're not doing it.
But lovingly.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. And we're here for part two. I'm here with Owen McCarthy and Lee Windsor of Ultimate Business Coaching. Hi there, guys. Thank you very much. Loved part one. Think we covered an awful lot of ground. I can't wait to watch it myself. But one of the things that we didn't really cover is actually what you do and why. You know, I've got written down here under coaching, who, what, and why. Mm-hmm. And that to me kind of sums it up, I guess. You know, the who always seems to be, you know, oh, if you've got coaching, you must be, your business must be struggling. I think that's probably the go-to. And then if I'm speaking to people who are being coached, like, oh no, I wanted to grow my business. Mm. The why coach? Why does somebody else know your business better than you? And then how does it work?
Yeah, cool.
Does that work as an easy open question for you?
Yeah,
both?
Yeah. Well, there's definitely about 3, 4, or 5 avenues I can
some open tabs now.
Yeah. Well, like, first place that comes to mind for me is like when you correlate it to sport. Our professional sport. It's like, why do they have coaches if they're the best at it in the world and somebody in their business doesn't, you know? And like you kind of spoke about wrapping up the last episode, it's usually the case that someone is struggling by the time they actually realize they need the help, you know? So there's 4 levels of the market. People who are bleeding, people who are struggling, then there's people who are succeeding, but then there's people who are leading. So like there's like them 4 verticals within the market. And ideally, if people are succeeding and leading, it's really easy to take that and like make it exceptional, like really, really good. Now, the hardest part is when someone's bleeding and they're almost bled to death and then you have to bring them back to zero. And getting people back to zero is a win in many cases. But it's not ideal because, you know, we understand the devastation that business not going well causes in people's lives. And for me, you know, the very first coach that I ever got, I spent a significant amount of money, almost my entire year's wage in the barbershop at the time before we even had the education business. Because I realized, oh shit, like if I don't get this right, or if I don't do this well for how I want to live, like I'm not going to be the one that suffers myself. My entire family will suffer.
Sure.
You know, my relationship with my partner might not even last because if money's the thing that gets in the way, then it's always going to cause issues. Like I think most relationships probably fail due to money issues
if you
tie it all the way back to that. So again, like we spoke about in episode 1, you know, that's why we moved from education into coaching, because it was just a problem that we were already solving for people in education. Like we had a hair course that in the end wasn't really even about the hair. People were just there for like the conversation, the rabbit holes. And then it's like, well, we need to integrate this with people somewhere. So that's why we started doing what we're doing in the coaching business. And to answer your question of like who, what, why, there is also the how. So Unlimited is kind of born around a model. So we use a model with our clients. We use the model in our own lives. It's an accumulation of everything we've learned over the years. And the end goal and the reason it's called Unlimited is because we want to give people a feeling that like, you know, remove limiting beliefs. I can do whatever it is I want to do. I can live an unlimited life, whatever that feels like for me. And for everyone, that's going to be slightly different. But what we've learned over the years is there's usually three kind of main ways or things that people have to do in order to have an unlimited life. You need money, because without money, you can't do very much. Impact with the work that you do, whether that's for clients or for team or for boss, usually it's boss. And then having a sense of freedom. And freedom isn't like sitting on a beach and sipping a cocktail. It's options, it's choices, it's the ability to like choose and work on things that you want to work on with who you want to work on them with, whenever you want, wherever you want. Like Lee was talking about in episode one. For me, what an unlimited life is, not working. Like, we work a lot, you know, but it doesn't feel like it because our work and our life is like integrated. So that's the way I would look at what an unlimited life is. Now, how do we do that? You know, all businesses kind of operate similarly. So with our model, it's just three overlapping circles. If people want to discover it further, we can put a link somewhere
We'll put a link in to the top.
Three overlapping circles are, you know, having a great delivery system. So how you deliver your product, your service, how you meet your customers' kind of needs. And then all businesses need to attract and retain clients or have repeat custom.
Yeah.
So that's essentially it. You know, it's attract, retain, deliver. And then on the outside of that, you know, if you want to attract great people into your world, it starts with brand, both clients and team. Brand, how do you get your brand out there? Through content, through social media. When it comes to retention, having a great skill set, serving people to a really high level, and leadership. Again, back to the leadership conversation from episode one. It's like both clients and team. It's like you want to retain team, you have to lead. And same thing then with the planning side of things, the delivery side of things, it's down to a good plan. Understanding why you do what you do in the first place and kind of reverse engineering from the end destination, and then developing good systems and having a model that can actually grow, because a lot of people are actually in vehicles that can't get them to the end destination. Yeah. So they don't even realize they're in a vehicle.
No chance, even however well it goes.
Exactly.
It's got its own built-in constraints.
It's like, you know, I want to make £1 million. It's like, but can your vehicle even reach £1 million?
Yeah.
A lot of people's vehicles can't.
Yeah.
So it's discovering that and then reverse engineering a plan. It's like, so what are we going to do to fix it? You know, we get people to like traffic light score themselves out of the model. It's like in the attract area, in the retention area, in the delivery area, right now, are you red, yellow, or green? And the idea is to turn the whole thing green over a period of time. Yeah. And at different revenue levels as well. That's we kind of use revenue level as something to measure. But like ultimately, like, one big philosophy that we have in our business is we don't actually give that much of a fuck about the client's business as such as like what they do. Don't care. Like, we care about the people who are running the business. And like, if it means they have to change vehicles, hop out of one vehicle and hop into the other one that makes them happier, totally fine with that. And we've had people come to our course early days, 2021, and say, I don't know if this hair thing's for me, you know, like, I think maybe this isn't for me. We'll say, yeah, great. What is for you? You know, we'll help them discover that.
Yeah. And that's a big bit of a perspective shift on how our model works. It really puts the life first. So we put the unlimited life first. And then to what do you want that to look like? How do you want to feel? How much money is that going to take? All that kind of stuff. And then we design the vehicle to get that. Not the other way around. And I think that's where, again, I think it's a systemic thing. We're told to look at the vehicle first and then pray that it might give us the life one day.
Yeah, I think, I speak to a lot of younger, you know, younger barbers that are starting out, and they seem to see the kind of end zone is, I'm going to open up my own shop.
Mm.
And the first thought in my head is, why?
Yeah.
What are you doing it for?
Because they're thinking about the vehicle first.
Exactly that. So you're absolutely bang on. I definitely have that conversation far too often that they're thinking about, I've got to get a shop. And it's like, okay, I mean, you can, but there is a plethora, you know, what do you actually want your life to look like?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference then between one of your courses, which you've just done a one-day course, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Which looked great.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between going on a business course and having a coach? Cool. What's the difference? Because I, a very long time ago, I went on a course. I won't name it, and that way I can be brutally honest about it. Which was over a year to teach me about my business, mm-hmm. And it was so generic that over the course of a year, maybe two or three things resonated with me, and I was like, okay, they were good enough. I'm quite happy with that, but it didn't feel like a year's worth of work. Mm-hmm. And I think probably looking back at it, what I probably should have done is been working one-to-one with a coach. Can you just explain, both of you, what the difference is to going on one of your courses and becoming one of your coached clients?
Mm. Well, the way we look at it in this sense, it's really understanding like the funnel of your business and the pipeline of events in your business. It depends where that event sits for that particular company in their pipeline of, let's just say, sales, for example, how they make money. So a course, say it's one day, it's just not long enough to change your business. Like we can't possibly tell you all the things in one day. It's just not possible. It's a snapshot of what is possible. And let me solve you a painful problem today, one of them, that will get you a step closer to where you need to be and a really good taste for what things could look like. So let's give you a little insider scoop onto how those events kind of work for us. Our one-day masterminds, they are client events first. So they are our existing client bases in-person events. Because in the digital world, I personally think that the ones that are going to win, who can still humanize them the most. We're still humans at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's why I don't separate. We were talking a little bit about this off camera, but what's going on in person and digital, they're not different. Why is that? Because there's still a person on the other side. Whatever you do online, I don't really care. It still requires a human to look at it.
Yeah,
right? Like it's just a different medium to get to humans. So we've got analog acquisition, digital acquisition. It's all the same stuff. It's the acquisition of people into our world. All the same stuff. Just a different way to do it. So knowing that, what's the common denominator in all of it? Well, we're dealing with humans. So if that's the case, I think the ones that are going to win are going to humanize it the most. That's primarily what it is. It's a great in-person event for our people. Then what we're doing in there is we're sharing our formats, our formulas, our systems, our frameworks, all the things that we do. And then guests can come to get one, two, three of their painful problems solved on that day and get a really good taste of what it's like to be in our world, to meet our people, to feel what they could be a part of, because it's very community driven as well. And then for us as a business, as a company, they are also like a sales and conversion event.
Yeah.
So and from a consumer aspect, to expect too much from an event like that is probably not a good thing, because it's impossible to get everything in a day. We even know that from a hair course, that you can't possibly learn to be the best hair cutter on the planet in one day. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I think for anyone who wants to do this kind of thing has to understand where that thing sits in your pipeline of events of making money. And that's really important to understand. And I think you're probably going to have a lot of hair people listening to this. It's really important for educators to understand that as well. Where does your one-day course sit in your pipeline of sales? Where does your three-day course sit? Where does your look and learn sit? Where does your stage event sit? Like, where does it sit and what does it mean?
Yeah.
And what comes before, what comes after? Mm. Because so many people hone in and focus on the thing, they forget about what happens before and after.
Yeah.
So, and that opens up the pipeline.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. We've met many people on this kind of 2-year journey we've been on here, and you kind of see the same faces that are popping up doing stuff, you know, that were doing little pods and then their main stage and so on. And there's definitely probably only a couple of handful of people that you've actually seen. You've been doing that for a part, and it's led you to, and you can suddenly see that goal of what they've been doing over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But there's quite a lot of others who've just been kind of doing anything given to them and trying to scratch a living out of it, that are kind of still doing exactly what they were doing when we met them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
And
but it doesn't
okay,
feel like
right?
a per- it just doesn't feel, there are just some people it feels much more purposeful that it's been part of a plan.
It's very intentional.
It's like intentional,
The same reason we don't have a barbershop. It's very intentional. You know, like, and there's a whole concept that we kind of I guess use in our world. It's like yesterday, for example, it's like it's the workshop that didn't matter, right? So the guest tickets, we don't make money off the guest tickets. But we did masterminds with other guys in Australia, and then two clients sign up off the back of that for the year because they're like, oh, well, I've discovered that I actually might need some extra support. So we just create the container for that to happen. So like Lee said, the in-person courses and events, they're like part of people's membership. They get to come for them for free if they're part of our community. And then we invite guests to kind of give them a taste for what is possible. That's kind of basically how it works.
No, I like that. I think that's the problem. I think there is, and I'm guilty of it, albeit kind of 20 years ago, that you'll go to a business course expecting clarity to form in your world. And actually the job is still it's still my job to go back and kind of fix it. You know, I'm just, going down that, you guys are the DIY shop that are pointing me at the right tools and you're showing me how to use them. Yeah. I've still got to go back and do it.
100%. You have to take the action, right? Like we can't solve someone's business problems, but we can definitely help them in solving them.
Do you find that frustrating when you've got someone who you're working with that just isn't doing it? Do you dump clients?
We don't.
Please stop giving me your money. You're really not taking my advice seriously.
We definitely shake them up when they need it.
Right.
And that's the job of any good coach, right? Sometimes you need to be like pretty direct with somebody about like where
they're not doing it.
But lovingly, not from a place of like projection or shadow, like us, like airing our frustrations onto our clients. But the best results in anything happens with consistency over time, right? And that's why, like, it doesn't have to be 12 months. It could be 6 months. It could be 3 months. It's whatever it takes for that person to get the results. That's what it takes. It's the same as the gym. You can't go to the gym for one day and go for 9 hours and then do nothing for the rest of the month and expect to turn into a bodybuilder. Sadly not. I wish it worked like that, but it doesn't. And it's the same thing with business growth and coaching.
I mean, obviously you both, you know, you spent a lot of time coaching others. Why stick with barbering? Why do you stay in this field?
That's a question we're asking ourselves.
That's a question we're asking ourselves.
Is it the world that you enjoy and that's why you stay here? Is it a world you feel you understand more? Because in your own words, kind of business is business and you don't really give a fuck about the actual business. You care about the people in it.
Yeah.
If you were approached for someone from a hairdressing company or a beauty company or even further afield from that, do you feel that it would apply or do you just don't feel comfortable out of that pond?
The model works. Like we have clients now who are not barbers. We have clients who are not hairdressers. They don't touch it. Or we have clients who are barbers and hairdressers who want to do something else. And we're helping them do that.
Yeah.
So the model works.
But the model itself is now, you know, your reputation is taking you into different. And you comfortable with that? Are you enjoying being?
Yeah. It's great. So I like to think about it this way. It's the same with hair, right? What you put out is what you can expect to get out. And we've built our brands and our names and our reputations in the hair world. So we're still known as the people in the hair world. So that's where our client base was built. But like Owen was saying, that the model works across the board to any business. And there are people that still need help in the hair world.
Yeah.
And the common denominator is like, it's people, right? You're just dealing with people. No matter where you go, most people deal with similar things. And most businesses also deal with similar things.
Yeah.
Marketing's great, right? If you think about a business this way, you behind the curtain, you can do lots of things, but the best marketers and copywriters in the world know that you can't talk about everything because it gets confusing for the market, right? So if we came out and said, we do this and do that, we're getting to that point where our lens is starting to shift on how we speak about what we do, but our reputation has been built. We've become key people of influence, not influencers, in the hair domain. And that's where it's at, right? So front facing, there's great marketers know that you can only speak about a few things well to with the dynamic of a message. But behind the curtain, you could do lots of things.
Yeah.
So there's a in front and behind. And I think that's just really important to think about. Because if you think about it, there's a concept called the mirror exposure effect. And I think it wasn't even that long ago, 10, 15 years ago, it would take a person an average of about 7 times to see your content, your message, your marketing, your advert, to consider, the keyword is consider, buying from you. Fast forward to today, I would say about 10 years, it's up around the 21 to 25 times because marketing is so, it's in our faces, it's becoming more and more and more. So we have to understand that. So it's important as a business person to think about, well, if I do need to market, which everybody does, how am I going to spend my efforts?
Yeah.
And what am I going to put my efforts into? So yeah, our brand and our reputation was built through the hair world, but now it is transitioning and you're going to see a change in how we speak about what we do. Mm-hmm. And we're just patient people. We just understand that, right?
Like, you're seeing the kind of coach, you know, that, like you say, the markets is seen as successful and then it grows and jumps on it. And we're seeing certainly coaching online, you know, It's a very much more crowded marketplace. Mm. And the same way as businesses, as bricks and mortar, we'll get pissed off that there's another barbers opening up the road. Our shops, you know, we're a 2-mile road and we've got 18 barbers on it. How do we survive? Does that affect you guys? What's your approach to this huge amount of competition that you're now getting with coaching businesses?
Sorry to interrupt, but I want to talk to you about something really important. Our podcast here is more than just about the industry, the barbershop, and the life therein. It's about the community that we built. And in the time we've been doing this podcast, the community has been amazing and we've loved it. Now we're looking for you to get involved and become an essential part of our future. We're seeking long-term, mutually beneficial opportunities for partnership to come on board and help spread our message, to connect with our community, to help grow it, to keep the message strong, and to keep hearing and discussing these amazing topics that we do with all our guests. If you think your brand is the right brand for us, if you want to get in touch, please email me at thenoblebarberpodcast@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram. Be really good to talk to you. We'd love you to be part of our future. Okay, and now back to the episode.
I mean, you guys were the original. I think I spotted that you guys were the "We Made a Million Online." That's a phrase that's been trotted out a lot more recently. How to be a £50,000 a week barber, and you've heard all these phrases. You coined that one very early on.
Yeah,
and I'm presuming there's truth in it.
Yeah. Well, like we've used the online space.
Yep.
To sell what we sell.
Yep.
Haircuts, education, coaching, mentorship, and we've made more than $1 million doing it. And that's what we've spoken about.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like in the coaching world, the coveted figure, you know, if you speak to something like that.
Oh no, it gets some attention.
It perks some
it?
Ears up, right? Yeah. But there's also like a level of transparency and honesty that's required for when people come into it as to what's possible based on the brand that they've built.
Yeah.
So, you know, for us, like we've stuck to the barbering market for now until we've in the last kind of 6 months or so started to like transition into other spaces because we know it so well. Mm-hmm. And we know what the avatar struggles with. We know how to help them get wins fast, like within the first 30 to kind of 60 days. Usually people make their return on investment and more.
Yeah.
The average person that comes into our world makes anywhere between 30 to 100,000 more per year on average for an investment that's much less than that. So that's why we've kind of stuck with that. And then competition wise, like we don't really care too much for what other people do because we can't focus on that. Like we just keep focusing on what we're focusing on. And like, we just know that our people resonate with us. We don't need a lot of people. We just need the right people.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's the same with stores. It's like, know your lane, know your clientele, know your customer base. Mm-hmm. I'm being devil's advocate, the simplicity for business. And certainly from my point of view, you know, we met recently, well, I've known a while, but we were just chatting with Dean Gleason recently, who's had a very successful business for 10 years, bricks and mortar. He's obviously very well known on the wild stage and everything he does with that. Shut his business down to open up a new store. Mm-hmm. And his first, when I started chatting to him, his first phrase was, I just kept saying to myself, if I was opening my shop up today, I'd do it so differently. And that's what he's done. He's taken the kind of 10 years of experience that he's got and, you know, when you've got a business 10 years, you've added a bit, you've done this, you've plotted it on. That's quite a brave move to kind of go, actually, I'm going to shut this. I'm finishing my partnership. It's all amicable. And I've opened up something completely different. Mm. And I've put all my kind of ducks in a line to start with. Mm. Do you meet many people that are that laser focused? Are you meeting people who really do see their future, or do you kind of clean the window a bit and point them in the, turn their head to the right view?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the kind of, our content is designed to maybe get them to start thinking about that.
Okay.
You know, because this is the thing, if people knew what their problem was, they wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple.
Yeah.
So like, our content will probably, and our marketing will probably change more lives than our coaching ever will. Because if people can put the pieces of the puzzle together themselves, they can just go and absorb all of our stuff on YouTube and learn a hell of a lot and make the changes themselves. But it's the same thing as, like, we know that if we all use weights and go for a run a couple of times a week, we'll probably get in better shape. Mm-hmm. But it takes paying a PT to actually get you to go and do it. But yeah, rarely do we know, or have we experienced people who come into our world and know exactly what they want. They might think they know what they want until they start exploring it and actually going on that journey. And then they realize, hang on a second, this isn't for me, right? And same thing with us when we were in the hair world or barbering. It's like, at one point in time, I thought, like, I'm going to do this forever. Like, I love cutting hair. Like, this is amazing. It's going really well. And then I get to a point where I realize, okay, well, I've kind of reached capacity, max speed in this vehicle. And I want to progress. I want to try something different, something more. And it's not until we put ourselves in rooms with our coaches and around other business owners that we realized, oh shit, there's this whole other world out there. It's like discovering fire again. It's like, oh wow, like there's so much more for us to explore. And I think that it's like a privilege for us to like want to go and do that. And I think, you know, holding on too long is what kills many people. So for someone like Dean, amazing. Why would he spend the next 10, 20 years of his career doing something that he doesn't really love and leaving a stone unturned?
Yeah, that's,
you know?
It. I guess that's the thing that resounds with me with coaching, is it's a positive voice in your ear. I think we're all, you know, from, you know, as you're saying, Lee, from our upbringing, you've got somewhere along the line, you've got that negative voice. You can't do that. That's not yours. You can't do that. You can't go there. You can't. Yeah. And I think we grow up with lots of can'ts.
Mm.
To remove all of that is what a coach, in my mind, is a someone positive in your ear that's kind of, of course you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's really exciting if that's what you're able to achieve.
It's something we covered on we just had our coaching call this morning with our group, and the way that I explained it to one of our guys, because he's becoming a coach himself, I said it's a kind of a gentle way of overriding someone's thought processes. It's really what you're doing as a coach. You are stepping in and overriding in a gentle way.
Yeah.
It's not jumping straight to do this. You should do this, because again, that's like that people don't really like to be told what to do. But what you're doing is you're expanding out the system that they're using, the thought process and the stories they're using to get them to there. And if you can, one of the best things you can do is to get them to learn something about themselves from themselves. And if you can do that, you're going to get the biggest transformation.
That's what we do. Finding good questions, isn't it?
And asking that's great.
Well,
questions.
I mean, I've got two adult sons now. My kids are 21 and 23, and from very young, and kids get scared. And I've always had the whole thing of, you know, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. These guys jump out of aeroplanes. They're all throwing up, terrified and crying before they leave the plane.
Yeah.
And because of the support around them, they jump.
Yeah.
Every single one of them is laughing by the time they're on the ground, loving it. And it's the fear that stops you, not the thing that you're scared of.
Yeah.
And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up part two, and I know I won't be forgiven if we don't try and tackle one issue. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've kept talking about, I've heard you keep talking about, we've spoken about a lot, pricing. Mm-hmm. So I realize this is probably a very long session, but just briefly, can I get a bit of something now as we finish this part two and our time together, that our listeners can just go away and chew on how they can look at their pricing when they are struggling, when they know their prices have got to go up, but they feel guilt, they feel like it's the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Can we get from a coach's perspective, each of you, how I should put my prices up?
Yeah, look, we have a system for it. Like, we developed a system for it based on like our experience of putting our prices up. The reason that I actually put my prices up in the first place to what it was, so in Australia, the number sounds bigger than what it actually is here. It's, you know, $50 in Australia is £25 here. Mm. When I went to Australia first, I was charging 50. It got all the way up to 150, and then it kind of landed anywhere between like 150 and more, you know, depending on the job. But I created constraints for myself. Like I was talking about earlier, I wasn't putting my prices up at that time to make more money. I was doing it to buy my time back so that I could work on the education business. So in that process, I was able to be a bit more playful with coming up with a system as to how to do this and how to communicate it effectively. So we have a system, we call it the price increase run-in. We use it with all of our clients. It's pretty much bulletproof. Nobody's ever had a poor experience with it. Frictionless price increases where the clients feel involved. It's not me versus you. I'm now charging you more. Contrarian thought, let's go there because fuck it, we're here. This is it. But I think that the price increase posts on Instagram are probably one of the worst things that's happened to barbering in recent years, because what relevance do they have? Like, why are you telling the general public about your prices going up in that capacity? It's just not the best way to do it, in my opinion, because it's just flexing on your clients. And if you look at the comments on most of those posts, it's other barbers leaving fire emojis and saying things like, oh, that's class, like, keep going. You know, it's barbers encouraging barbers, which is great. But the client is left on the side thinking, like, this is a little bit weird. I've been going to this shop for years. I thought I had a relationship with this guy. Why did he not just tell me in the chair? Mm. So we get people to go to their people in the chair first, discuss some of the reasons why. It's good to have a reason, you know, other than maybe just making more money. But if that's the case, totally fine too.
Yeah.
If you want to just make more money, go and make more money. It's okay. You might need it to survive, to feed your kids, to feed your family, to make profit. But our system is based on communication. It's just you communicate it well and in enough time. So by the time it actually happens, you've handled all of the objections and you don't lose your business. You don't burn your business to the ground overnight because you've put your prices up when you might not have the demand. You might not have even the time to supply the demand. There's many different factors, but the basis of it, I would say, is communication.
Yeah.
But the price increase posts, I'm not the biggest fan of them. I think that can be handled offline because you don't see coffee shops do it. You don't see other businesses do it, like, because there's just no need. You can communicate that internally, in my opinion. But
I said it beautifully. I take a bit of a psychological approach on it. I think very important to address our money story, what we believe money is, what we believe is even happening with it. Again, I recommend everybody watching this to go and watch Ray Dalio's Money Machine on YouTube. It'll explain financial markets to you, how the whole economic system works, the whole world. And then you might start to understand the function of money. One person's spending is another person's income. We have to understand that, and businesses are designed for us to make a living. You know, and I would really love barbers to understand this, and hair professionals at large, I guess, are going to be listening to this. Don't disrespect yourself by being too cheap. It's a disrespect to yourself. You are cutting off your quality of life and your living, not just for you, but for your family and for everyone who comes after you. And why? Because why would you do that to yourself? You've chosen this as your means to make a living. Like, start there. If you think you putting your price up is robbing from the poor, then that is your money story. And a psychological view on this, and a statistical view, is that your average financial literacy level is the average of the people in the postcode that you grew up in.
Because the stories
we get told about money
come
from the people we learn from, right? And who are the people we learn from? The average of the people in our postcode we grew up in. Generally, we went to school in that area. Our friends were in that area. Their parents were there. Our parents were there. Blah, blah. So we get our aggregate story from the average of those people. So, like, back to our point at the beginning, I had to address my own money story and think, is it true? Yes or no? Doesn't really matter if it is. Identify that. And is it useful? Was it useful for me to keep thinking what I did about money? It wasn't. I had a bad money story. Most people do, especially here in the UK. I don't meet many people who have a good relationship with money. It's so important to get back to that. And I would just implore everybody to start there, because I think we're all doing ourselves a big disrespect by not charging enough.
Yeah. No, I mean, 100%. I think that's the thing everyone does think. I don't even think they get to the point of thinking, I'm not really worth that. It is a matter of they can't afford that or they won't pay that.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. I was just chatting with someone last month that, you know, I'm dropping days. I'm going to be stepping back from my store business. And the first thing he said was, doubling your prices then. I was like, of course. Because I'm going to be doing half the work.
Yeah.
The price will double.
In theory, you can do that. You could double your prices and lose half
my clients.
Make the same money if you have enough demand. And that's part of the flywheel too, right? So that's why it's a system and we need to look at all the ingredients before we can say, can someone put their prices up or not?
Yeah.
If anyone wants to discover it further, last year where we didn't meet you at Barber Connect, we did a show called The Art and the Science of Pricing. We can send it to anyone if they reach out to us and want to discover it deeper.
Cool.
There's a 30-40 minute show that we just talk about the art, the science, because it's an art and a science.
Brilliant. Guys, thank you very much. I hope that helps everybody. I've really enjoyed that. I hope you do. I've been Anthony Laban. This has been the Noble Barber Podcast. Boys, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.